big enchilada. You can't just take bits and pieces. You need the whole thing. That's what we're going to be talking about today. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church and not a connoisseur of food, but I do know that you can connect the dots between enchiladas and a lot of spirituality. I'm here to do that. Episode number 436 of The Next Step.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
A lot of my friends don't really want to go to church. Young girl named Ashley, 17 years old. She reflects about her particular church by saying, "But we want to be here." And the older people in our church can see that, so that they want us to be here. Now listen to this. Our whole church treats us like we're the church of today, not just the church of the future. Have you heard that before? Welcome to The Next Step, huh? What have we been talking about for the last 8-9 years? Well, for me, it goes a lot farther, but at least I have a record here. Welcome to The Next Step. At least we have a record of saying that for the last 8 or 9 years, every single week. Isn't that beautifully said? This is out of a book called Growing Young. And I will have a link on today's show notes so you could check it out with me, because I'm checking it out myself. Just got it into my hands. Growing Young, 6 Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. Wow! There's the answer, 6 strategies. And it's about what congregations are doing right. Anyway, this book came to me. We just started a new program. Actually, we're hoping that this will be the first of an annual process of a conference of an Armenian church, a Christian conference, and it'll be taking place in Lent. So I want you to mark your calendars. I told you about it last week. Last night we had an incredible meeting talking about what it's going to involve, what it's going to entail. An easy way to remember when, because that's all you need to do right now, is just mark your calendars. It's a 333, okay? It's a 3-day conference on the 3rd day of the 3rd month. How's that? 333. Easy to remember. March 3rd, 4th, 5th. We're going to be out in Burbank at the Western Diocese headquarters, and the entire facility, the entire campus has been allocated for this project under His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian's auspices. We're going to be having a 3-day conference about things that matter. In fact, the name of the conference is called Embracing Our Faith. Embracing our faith in a changing world. And trust me, the world is changing. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes, too. I mean, today we've got so much on The Next Step. I could fill it up beyond our 1 hour. You should have seen the way Ken looked over at me. No, don't worry. We're not going beyond an hour. But there is a lot of stuff. But back to our point, this little quote that I gave you. Before we go any further, let's make it very clear. We got to talk about the church of today. And so many times I have repeated this, and really the success of youth ministry, the successes we've had, whether it's in Cupertino, in Pasadena, and now in Glendale, and now in these new ventures, is really exactly this point that this young girl, was it Leslie, was it, says, that we are not treated as the church of the future, but the church of today. I mean, think about that. That is so profound if you really think about it. It's a point that has been at the cornerstone of my ministry, is treating young people as part of today. I mean, what are they? When you talk about them, young people, as being part of the future, what are you doing? You're saying they belong somewhere else, some other time frame. No way. They are part and parcel of the experience that is around us right now. And you have to even take it a little bit farther, and I do, by saying, you know, how dare we many times imply that the world that we have created is so great that we want our children to be part of that, rather than, and I agree, you have to adapt, and there's part of the growing process and the wisdom that comes with it. But at the same time, we have to look at the world through the children's eyes. We have to see the purity. We have to see their sense of wonder at all of the amazing things that happen in the world, and really adopt some of that. I think when Christ invites us to become like children, it's exactly for that reason. It's exactly for that reason. It's like, take a look at the world. It's beautiful through the eyes of a child. There is wonder. There is excitement out there. And a lot of times what life does to us, it slaps us around so many times that we lose that wonder. We lose that child essence. Go back to the being that child. Anyway, that's a completely different story. And all I wanted to do today is really share with you this book called Growing Young. I will put a link on today's show notes, and definitely we'll be looking at it as... Like I said, I just opened it up last night and was just thrilled to see this right on the front page. It's the first quote that starts off the book. So I'm looking forward to reading this and sharing some more ideas with you. And hope you'll pick it up too. It sounds exciting. 6 Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. Can't get any better, right? Anyway, we're going to have a lot of other stuff to talk about. How about politics? I know we don't want to talk about politics here on The Next Step, but we do, right? Inevitably, our world turns around politics, or should it? We talk about changing metaphors. Well, look what happened here in America. We're going to be talking about this during the second portion of today's show. The conversation escalated to a disgusting point. It's gotten disgusting. And vulgar, crude. And you're saying this is the presidency? This is what we're going to be basing the presidency on? Okay, now that's the political side of it. Let me talk to you spiritually. Many times we talk here on The Next Step, and one of the cornerstones, of course, of Armadoxy is changing the metaphors so that we start talking in different languages. Well, what do you do when the conversation escalates to a point where the only language is to really fight fire with fire rather than with water? We'll talk about that coming up in the second portion. But let me start off today by sharing a couple insights of along the way what happened this past week. First of all, last Thursday, as we finished our show, I was invited to be the speaker over at the YWCA. And from what I understand, the YWCA, of course, we know it was the Young Women's Christian Association, but now it's just the YWCA. I think they have patented, or is that the word for it? They have registered that name, the YWCA. So you don't need to really say what the acronym stands for. YWCA is YWCA. It's not Young Women's Christian Association, because, of course, by including that word Christian, you're excluding a lot of other peoples, or so the mentality goes. Anyway, that's on the sidelines. I spoke there about domestic violence, and they had asked me to give an Armenian church viewpoint, particularly In His Shoes viewpoint, and I spoke about the In His Shoes experience, and the experience that we need as a community. And remember, I'm speaking in Glendale, one of the largest center concentrations of Armenians outside of Armenia, probably the second only to Moscow. I think after Armenia, it's Moscow, then here in Southern California. And I could be wrong. Southern California could be the largest. But anyway, suffice it to say there's so many Armenians here. And we're at this domestic violence event. Now, remind you that that the government in Glendale, out of the five council members, three of them are Armenian. Mind you that so many government officials, from the clerk on to the attorneys that are behind there, are Armenian. How many of them do you think attended this gathering? Community-wide vigil against domestic violence. Yeah, open your hand, you'll see the number right there. Yeah, none of them were there. The mayor had come, she had came to do her ceremonial duty, not Armenian, came and did her ceremonial, you know, here, this is very important, we're all against domestic violence, and as long as I'm mayor, we're going to be doing this stuff and stopping domestic violence. And sure enough, she had to leave before it ended. But the, you know what? I'm mentioning this. Why? Because what do we expect from politicians? They basically have to go where the votes go. And I want you to think about this realistically. Obviously, we all want our issues resolved. We want all of our issues taken care of. But there is just a limited number of resources. Let's call them dollars. There's a limited number of dollars. And when you've got issues, you have to weigh them out. Well, what is the way that they weigh them out? It's called statistics. And we all know that. You know, you could throw out some statistics and you can sway those statistics. You can have them stand for anything you want. You can, you know, there's that classic story of the American and the Russian. Back in those times, it was called the Soviet Union. The American and the Soviet or the Russian in a two-man race. And the American wins the race. In the American press, in the U.S. press, the headlines read, America wins the Soviet Union. America wins the Russian. In Russia, we see the same race covered as Russians came in second place. The Americans came in next to last. True? Absolutely. Absolutely it's true. It's the same event, but offered differently with different statistics. You can sway statistics any way you want. And unfortunately, that's what they do. And so if there's an incident of domestic violence, well, how many of them are there? Well, in our city, we have, let's say, the need for, you know, fixing potholes in the asphalt is so tremendous that we need to put our resources in those potholes rather than in these human services to end domestic violence and so on and so on. Well, this is the way politics works. Let's be honest. And I want you to remember that because later on we'll be talking more about politics. We put a lot of emphasis on the wrong people. And unfortunately, our church is right in there with the whole group. We honor politicians rather than people of faith, people who understand that there is a God that is higher than all of the politics that we play. Because that's all it is. They play politics. And that's what statistics do. It's the same thing what the Russian did. You know, the Russians came in second and America came next to last. Is that a lie? No, absolutely not. Two-person race. The American won. The Russian came in second. Nothing wrong with that, right? It's how you report that same incident. The Russian came in second place. That's an honor, right? The American came in next to last. True. It's all how you present it. And certainly politicians have a way of presenting this. So I was at the YWCA and there we were at a vigil. And of course, an Armenian population where, and I want this to be very clear because we've spoken about this and you know I'm passionate about it, where domestic violence is an issue. An Armenian population did not attend to this event. Mind you, a few of them did. I should say maybe at the most 10. I think we brought five over from our church, and there was five others. Now, well, here's the interesting thing. They had asked me to speak about the problem of domestic violence, and I spoke about how I had gone to Armenia, participated in a demonstration throughout Yerevan. I had been to seven precincts in Yerevan. And if you go back 2 years exactly to the date, you'll find those broadcasts. We broadcast right from Yerevan. In fact, an opportunity for me to do a shout out to the camera lady who was with me, a dear friend, Tamar, has just given birth to twins just yesterday. So we're excited about that over here too. But you will find those on the next step. Documented how we went from precinct to precinct in Yerevan, and there was a straight out denial of domestic violence. You know why? Well, there is no statistic for it. Guess what? Because there's no laws against domestic violence. You can do anything to your spouse, so long as you don't kill them. Because once you kill them, then that goes into the category of murder, of manslaughter, whatever it may be. It doesn't fall into a domestic violence pattern. So there are no laws against domestic violence. It's between a husband and a wife. And we saw so many people. And I recounted a story of a man who came up to us, and one of the girls who was protesting, a young girl, I was just so taken by the passion that these young people had. And both, I would say, I can't say high school, they were probably college age. They were in their late teens, early 20s. And we had a chance to go with them from precinct to precinct. And one of these young girls went up to this man who came to disturb the protest. And he said that, you know, what's between a man and a wife, you people don't have a right to talk about. And one of the girls said, do you have children? And the man answered, yes, I have three daughters. And I wouldn't believe this if I didn't hear it. She turned to the man and she said, and what would you do if your daughters, their spouses, their husbands beat on them? And he said, this is what he said. He said, if they deserved it, then they had it coming to them. You can't believe people like that, but there are people. I mean, I can't believe it, but then you see the statistics for domestic violence. Somebody is allowing it. So I made mention of this in my speech, and I talked about the Armenian experience, that we're all for, you know, for an event, a recognition of an event that took place 100 years ago, you know, the Armenian genocide. We have to be equally alert to what's going on right now. Of course, what I said got misconstrued by the few Armenians that were there, and later on I heard it, yeah, altered in many, many different ways. I shouldn't say many, many, at least two or three different ways. Now, basically, Father Voskin was against the Armenian genocide. I go, what? What? How did you get that from there? I said, we have an obligation. And that's one of the reasons why we tape. That's why we record so many of the speeches. Although we get many, many requests for these speeches. But it's one of the reasons why we record these sessions too. Because so much of it gets misconstrued. Anyway, let's not give more airtime to that than it deserves. But this is the reality. Many times we get consumed with events in history rather than realizing that we are the history being unfolding right now. It's the same story as what we started off at the beginning, right? Here's the connecting of the dots. Growing young. What did the girl say? We are treated as the church today, not the church of the future. In other words, we exist today in the same way. There's issues right now. You can't be looking at a genocide that took place 100 years ago and not paying attention to where you're walking or where you're in right now. Do you know that in Armenia, this is a statistic, a statistic we just discovered: 12,000 abortions every year. 12,000. Move that out 10 years. 120,000. Talking about a genocide 100 years ago? Talk about a genocide taking place right now. Who are those kids? Who are those children that are being murdered? That's it. There you go. Figure it out. But we're looking back. We're looking back and we're applauding people in the back. We're saying, oh yeah, thank you. Thank you for recognizing. We're not recognizing what's going on in our lives right now. Anyway, that was the incident at the YWCA. Also, we had an opportunity the following day to honor a very, very dear friend of mine. I was honored by the Western Diocese, Father Arshak Khachadurian. He was, in a way, a mentor to me. He was the sponsor at my ordination some 35 years ago. Just a wonderful, wonderful man with an incredible voice. You've heard him here on the Next Step. He sings in that beautiful, let's see, can you cue it up? Here, listen to this.
Lord God, up thy condiment, subsehanus archaiadon, desec basmiam Christos argain, Yeshuj badiam
is Father Arshak Khachadurian. Beautiful, beautiful voice. It is off of a CD that was prepared a couple of years ago by the Western Diocese, where he sings the portion of the deacon, the part of the deacon of the Divine Liturgy, and the Archbishop is the celebrant on this particular recording. I'll have a link on today's show notes so you could check it out. It should be available somewhere. If it's not, get in touch with me. Maybe we could make that available somehow in a digital format. Beautiful recording. Anyway, Father Arshag with this incredible voice. I mean, if you have a choice to listen to anyone singing in the Armenian Church, for me, it's always been Father Arshag. He will make the hair stand up on your arms. Of course, provided you have hair on your arms, which I do, you know, okay? There aren't too many words that I could use to describe him apart from just genuine, loving, caring, a true believer in Christ, in the Holy Apostolic Church, in the mission of the Church, in understanding of the power of the Holy Eucharist. I mean, he laid a foundation in so many of us of this understanding of what the redeeming power of the Holy Divine Liturgy. There you go. And I was just so happy that he was honored, a man like him. You know, the good guys, okay? And I think the cream on it, the topping on it, was when there was an announcement that the Choir Association, in recognition of his beautiful voice and the many lives that he has touched, announced that they will be offering a scholarship in his name to future generations. And I thought that was such a fitting and beautiful way to celebrate the ministry of this priest, Father Arshak Khachadurian. I'll try to get some links on that as well on today's show notes. So you've got basically what we went through during the week. The final thing is the AC101. Now, these videos are going viral. And it's for that reason I'm going to take a break right now. Before going there and talking about the politics and all that, we're going to get the song of the day. And I've picked out music from Latin America. A guy named Sarkis. Sarkis playing songs and dances of Latin America. That's the name of the album. This one is called Manuela. Enjoy.
Manuela.
The artist is Sarkis, a single name, single-named artist, Sarkis. And it is off of an album called Songs and Dances of Latin America. Song is Manuela. There is a link on today's show notes. You could check out his music, beautiful album, and I hope you enjoyed it, because I certainly did. And it leads us to the next portion. Just think Latin America. Well, the reason why I went to Latin America was because of enchilada. And I want to talk about that. We basically hit on it last week about the whole enchilada, about how important it is that we understand, you know, when you're eating at any type of food, but there is an expression, you want the whole enchilada. And I think it's appropriate because an enchilada comes with the tortilla. It comes with the sauce. There is cheese. There are vegetables in there. Sometimes there's meat. There's all kinds of different ingredients. Take one of those ingredients out, or one of those factors out. For instance, if you didn't have the bread, the tortilla on there, it just isn't an enchilada. It's basically a salad, or it's something else. You take out the guacamole, well, it's not the whole enchilada. And expression is so appropriate when you talk about Armadoxy. And I've been having this problem, and I've shared it with you only lightly, about the AC101s. If you notice, the AC101 video series that we started earlier this year has just taken off. It's gone viral. In fact, our most recent one, the most recent one was the letter E, which was one of my favorite ones. But the one called Etchmiadzin was taken, it was placed on the Etchmiadzin website, or Facebook account. I was so honored. I was so honored that we had made it to the Mother Sea. But it has received over almost 80,000 views. And the one about the letter E, the one about the coffee cups, 50,000, 60,000, some 20,000. At the very least, we're averaging right around 15, 20,000 hits. Now, here's what's interesting to me. I read the comments and I go through them, but I don't post them on my site. And I try to keep a distance from them. And I'll tell you why. People have asked me, why aren't you posting them? Why aren't you getting excited? So many people are excited about them. I mean, not a day goes by that I don't get an email or a request for this or that, answers to questions. But you will see the postings on Facebook. You'll follow them on Twitter. You look at a lot of stuff that's going on. It's not the full enchilada. And because it's not, we're suffering for that. And this is how. People are looking at it and they'll take one little portion of it. And then they start extrapolating. They start building up their own stories. Simple one. I spoke about the Garden of Eden being in Genesis 2. Now, if you're a student of Armadoxy, you've been following me for the years. You've got the whole enchilada in front of you. So you understand where that tradition of the Garden of Eden fits in the entire story. That there is the story of love. There is the power of Christ, which is beyond those historical events and trivialities. If you want to follow the story in Genesis chapter 2, verses 10 through 14, there is a description of where the Garden of Eden is, and it points to four rivers. Okay, pull out the old map and you put it down and you understand, hey, that's Armenia. Whoa, lo and behold. By the way, I've got to tell you, do you know who turned me on to that fact? It was Father Arshag that I shared with you a few minutes ago. Father Arshag, when I was his assistant back in the early 80s, he had a clipping in his office of Billy Graham. Yes, famous evangelist Billy Graham, who in his studies had figured out where those four rivers are. Now, two of them, you know, the Tigris and the Euphrates, but there are two that you have to kind of look up old maps and find everything. Anyway, Billy Graham was the one who said that it was in Armenia. What we know today is Armenia. This is where the Garden of Eden is. Okay. I mentioned that in AC 101 and people start going off. Okay, is it in the Bible? Now, this is what's interesting. Somebody asked, they said, where do we find that? And I guess they didn't listen to the show, because on the show, not only do I say it, but it's written up there too. Anyway, so somebody said, if you can't find it, Google it. Where is the Garden of Eden? And it'll give you the answer. And the response was, I don't want Google. I want to know where it is in the Bible. Oof. Now, if you know what, if you've been a student of Armadoxy, you know that that doesn't even make sense, right? It doesn't even make sense. What's the difference whether you look it up on Google or whether you find it in the Bible? Google's a faster way of getting over to the Bible passage. Anyway, somebody chimed in and said, this is where it is, and offered it. But this is only the tip of the iceberg. People are out there looking for the small little clips instead of understanding the whole enchilada. They're saying, I like the secret sauce on there. I like the use of vegetables. You know, your tortilla is nice over there. But they're not understanding the full enchilada, which is Armadoxy. And this is a challenge. It's certainly a challenge for me, and I think it has to be a challenge for many people in their life goals, is that as you go through life, you know, you've already experienced, you've already come to a point of understanding. You are already at a certain level of wisdom based on your past experiences, what you've been through, what life has taught you. Somebody comes in, they can't just pick and choose what they want. And that's what AC 101 is doing. It's picking and choosing small little pieces and not giving the entire enchilada. So AC 101, if you think about it, it's basically like a Taco Bell. You go through it and you find the one thing that you want and you get it. But you're not getting the full experience of the enchilada. Anyway, that's a small little point that I had to share with you, because there are so many beautiful, beautiful messages that people have been leaving for me, including ones that really humble you. They say, there was one young lady who left a message saying that she grew up in the Soviet Union and never had religion. And because of these AC 101s, she's been following, and it's kindled in her heart the desire to learn more about her faith, to learn more about Christ, about God's redemptive power in his love towards us. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff. Anyway, I am humbled. I am honored. I needed to share that with you because I've been trying to find the bigger enchilada. I've been trying to serve the bigger enchilada. But these little pieces, they go a long way. And, you know, there is also the aspect that people will understand and believe what they want to. So if you have a belief in Armadoxy, you've got the full enchilada, you understand that. And then there are people who have their own belief. They bring in their own sauce. They bring in their own type of cheese, their own type of vegetables, and expect to get the big package, which, you know, you're serving. Anyway, let me leave it at that. I just wanted to share it with you because there is a bigger enchilada that I want to talk about. And that is the world situation and the politics that are driving the world situation. And now they're talking about that possibly Russia has gotten involved and hacked emails so that to sway our elections. The big media sites have all exposed this, have talked about it. They go on and on. And now here's the bigger enchilada, is what is our reaction? I have shared with you through the years this idea that we need to change the metaphor. In fact, in my video called Leveraging Love, it is so distinct over there the call to being able to leverage something that we all have. Imagine that. You have the power to love. Christ tells us it is the ultimate power. Christ tells us that we can change the world. Now, beyond Christ, you listen to everybody around you. Everybody will tell you that the world, the love makes the world go round. They'll tell you things like, oh yeah, love is beautiful. We see the power. But how many of us believe that? How many of us are willing to go out on a limb and say that I can effectuate and change the world because of the love that I have in my heart? No, we don't do that because we are bombarded all around us with this idea that might is right. And so things happen, and now you have to escalate by becoming mightier than the other person. And look, case in point, look at the politics all around us. Look at these two people that are running for president of the United States, the most powerful position in the world. And look at the people that we've got, a Donald Trump and a Hillary Clinton. You've got to ask yourself, can we do better? And the answer is frightening. No, we can't. We don't have anybody else. Nobody else has come forward. So what is it? Is it the fear? Is it that most people get to a certain wisdom level and they say, it doesn't matter? Perhaps it's apathy. I don't know what it is. But it's just confounding. It is completely confusing. It's beyond reason that this is the best in a country of 300 million people. And what would you say about 100, let's say a half of them are eligible to run, that it comes down to these two. And we saw it unfold last weekend at the presidential debate, the second one. And what was that about? I mean, it was repulsive. It was hideous. It was like two people getting out there and talking about who's more repulsive than the other. I don't know. Very turn off. And then it occurred to me that isn't this what we've been talking about? We talk about finding a new metaphor when really the metaphors are already out there. And people have accepted it. They've accepted that in this day and age that there is a reality and it's okay to be crude. Anything goes. Modesty, forget about that. These are words of the past. It's about just being as crude as you possibly can. And then enter in the need to become cruder, more powerful. The need to win the fight in traditional sense. And now enter in this discussion, this ongoing discussion that we've been having here on The Next Step. Do you fight fire with water or with fire? What do you do when your assailant, when the person coming at you keeps coming to you with more and more fire? And this is in all aspects of our life, right? In our relationships. Whether it's with children, with parents, with loved ones. With our spouses, with our friends, right? We get fire. And then what do we teach? Well, the Christian response, forgive. How many times? 7 times 77. In other words, always forgive. The Christian response, love is powerful. Love can overtake that hatred. You've heard me say it, right? Well, I say it because my Lord Jesus Christ has said it. But do we really believe this? I mean, the ways of the world teach us something different, right? I mean, we learned this from our very early experience of looking at the Wild West. Person who has the bigger gun, that's the person who wins. Person who comes out there, the shootout. Who's the fastest draw? It's a shootout until one of them is injured, dead, finished. And we think of our relationships. Whether they're personal relationships on a global level, we think of them in the same way. Person who is mighty is the person who has strength. Whether that strength is measured by bullets, by bombs, or by personality. But being mean. Or by being abusive. Right? And think about what we're experiencing in all these debates that we've been seeing, whether they're formal debates or debates by popular opinion. Hey, listen, I've been watching this show for the past month, I guess. It is fascinating to me. It is called Designated Survivor. It's on ABC. It's a TV show that I watched last night, actually. It's only 4 episodes so far. I'm fascinated because since I was a kid, I've heard about this designated survivor. You see, once a year, our Constitution demands that the president give the State of the Union. In other words, where is the United States today? What is the State of the Union? Sometime in January, he has to provide that to a joint session of Congress. That means all of the senators, that means all of the House of Representative members are there, including all 3 branches of the government, which is the executive. He's there. The vice president is there. I don't know if the vice president sits as the president of the Senate that night or if he sits as the vice president, but certainly he's there. You have Congress that is there, the legislative branch, and then you have the judicial branch represented by the Supreme Court. So they are all there. So basically all of your government, the entire United States government, is inside this one building, the Capitol building, on that particular night. And ever since I've been a kid, I've remembered, and it was very intriguing, they always announced that one member of the cabinet, we didn't know who it was, I guess you could look around and figure it out, one member of the cabinet would stay behind, would not be there, just in case that there was such an attack, whether intentional or maybe it was natural disaster, you don't know, the earth opens up, whatever it may be. So that the entire government would be wiped out, but this one sole survivor, this designated survivor, would be there to continue the government. And it's been interesting because that's the premise of the show. And sure enough, there's an attack on the Capitol building, and all of the government is wiped out except for this designated survivor. And the show is about, well, the challenges that he faces, because not only does he have to get morale back up in the United States, not only does he have to deal with the crime scene, but now he has to justify that he is a non-elected official. He's a member of the cabinet appointed. On top of that, I guess to more melodramatic, is that the day before he was, I forgot if he was fired or if he had resigned from the position, and he was basically a placeholder and he was going to be finishing up his term. So all of a sudden, now he's the president of the United States. So he has to also justify himself in this position. So here's the interesting scenario in this. That there are people that are challenging him, in particular one governor who says, hey, I'm not going to be following your orders. And it becomes push comes to shove, where he earnestly, honestly tries to overcome him with some good intentions, with some good feelings. And the only way that it escalated to a point that the only way that he could deal with him was to actually deal with him by force. And of course, what we're describing is basically how wars come about, right? You can have a chess game between two powers. Let's use some arbitrary Pakistan and Iran, okay? You can have a chess game between the two of them and say the winner will rule over this certain territory. Well, okay, chess game. You could do a basketball game. You could do all kinds of things. But let's suppose the winner says, okay, now I am in charge of this territory by virtue of me winning this nonviolent expression, this chess game that we did. Well, the other one now turns and says, okay, well, we'll up it. You didn't like the, I didn't care for the chess game. Let's go out there and have a game of basketball. And whoever wins that, that's the person that'll do it. And then the other country wins that basketball game. The other one says, wait, let's do a wrestling match. And the wrestling match, of course, becomes a fight. A fight becomes a draw. A draw becomes, let's see who is the fastest gun. And then that gun escalates and it escalates until you can overcome it with might. This is basically the scenario, right? We exhaust all possibilities. And the final possibility, when that possibility is exhausted, then the only thing left is to go out there and fight. Now, we've gotten to a point where we're not exhausting those possibilities. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a guest on this show. She was responsible for cleaning up the landmines in Artsakh. Her name is Gala, a very dear friend of ours. She brought up this entire issue. Okay, what do you do when they keep doing this? And she brought up this scenario. Someone sets your house on fire. What do you do at that point? Well, you put it out. And if I remember right, that's when we started talking about putting that fire out with water as opposed to more fire. You don't, when somebody sets your house on fire, you don't go to his house and set his house on fire. No, your first thing is you put your fire out. But what do you do when he comes back? You put it out again. What do you do the third time? Okay, then you've had enough. Maybe you call in some friends, i.e. the authorities, and you say, hey, this is the guy and everything. But when he comes back the fourth time, the fifth time, the sixth time, at some point you realize, okay, I have to take care of the problem. I have to take that guy out. And the challenge for us is there another voice? Is there another metaphor? Is there another way, another set of circumstances that we could use to answer this situation so that we can stop that escalation of violence? And here is the big key. Here's the big question. We talk a good talk as Christians. Are we convinced that there is a power in love? And if there is, why aren't we exercising it? Because, and I'll tell you why we're not, obviously, because our language is the language of might, of war. But can we turn it around and start expressing ourselves in terms of the love? So that when somebody is burning our house down, can we turn around and say that I will fill him with so much love that he doesn't know what to do? Now, this sounds absurd. Of course it sounds absurd. But guess what? This is the absurdity that Jesus taught. Yeah. Sermon on the Mount. If someone sues you, he says, takes you to court and wants your shirt, give him your jacket as well. If someone slaps you, turn him the other cheek. Well, it's the absurdity that Christ teaches. Now, there's been a few people that have been able to tap on this. The idea of nonviolence, of not escalating the violence. Immediately comes to mind Martin Luther King Jr. He tapped into this, the power of love. And he differentiated, saying that I'm glad that Jesus said, love your enemy. And not like your enemy, because I don't like somebody who's coming and trying to kill me, trying to kill my kids. I can't like him, but I can love. And herein, when he starts talking in this manner, herein is the expression of changing that metaphor. We've gotten away from that. We need to return back to that simple language. And it's difficult because the way of the world, because the expressions of the world, because what we're familiar with, i.e. the environment, is not conducive to this new type of language, to harbor or to propagate this type of language. And herein is the challenge for Christianity. Herein is what I am talking about the entire enchilada. And herein is the problem when we pick and choose bits and pieces of Christ's message. Christ's message is the entire enchilada. And it does work. I'm convinced it works. But we choose and pick the parts that we want. No, the harder parts are the love commandments, are those impossible commandments, are the ones that go against reason, the crazy ones. What do you mean? If he sues me for my shirt, I should also give my coat. What do you mean, turn the other cheek? If he smites me on one side, do the other one. And I know there's all kinds of ways that people start saying that back in the Roman times, you know, this is what it meant. That was the backhanded thing. No. It's about incredible love. And you say that, is that possible love? Well, there is a possibility, right? Because Christ himself demonstrates that up at the cross. He gives it his all. He demonstrates compassion. He demonstrates forgiveness. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And herein, I think, is the key to it. They don't know. They don't speak the language that I am speaking. They don't know what they're doing. They don't speak it. They're bits and pieces. They've taken apart the enchilada. And they want a little bit of the special secret sauce on there because it tastes good. But they're not willing to take the entire thing. Wrapped up with the tortilla. Wrapped up with the melted cheese on there. Because the whole product is what I have to offer. This is our challenge. When we accept Armadoxy, we've got to be able to challenge ourselves to look at the places that do not look doable, that do not look feasible. And it is in those areas that we're going to find the answer to the most profound questions that we have about our life. Again, whether it's on a global scale or individual scale. It's tapping into that power of love by understanding it's a different language than the language we're speaking. It's taking a bite out of the entire enchilada at that point. Understanding that if you want to taste it, you got to go for the gusto. You got to go for the whole thing. That's where the flavor is. That's where the delicacy is. That's where the specialty of the house is. The entire package. Jesus Christ, the entire package. Everything that he talked about, from birth to resurrection, historical events, okay, but his message, even the impossible messages, the power of love is there. It's for us to tap into it. Take a break for a few moments. Susie with her announcements. I'll be back in a few.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 9th year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to our listeners for your support, your generosity, your prayers. Some of the most simple support is just sending out the podcast to your friends, getting new people to listen. I mean, we appreciate all that you do. It's about the next step. It's about taking a next step. And we are doing that every single day. I thank God for this beautiful ministry that we have, and thank you all for being part of it. You can donate, like Susie said, go on the Inner Shoes website, hit on the donate button. You can also send in a donation if you feel like it. Inner Shoes, 632 West Stalker in Glendale, California, 91202. And make it happen. I hope you enjoyed today's show. We're doing an awful lot of stuff. I want you to put on your calendar March 3rd, 2017. We will be meeting for a conference called Embracing Our Faith in a Changing World. That's on 3-3, but how about the 7-7 event? Yes, July 7th coming up, 2017. That's a Friday. It's a conference on forgiveness. 7 times 77. So mark those on your calendar. There'll be new stuff coming out. Do check our website, inhisshoes.org. Of course, we're at all the usual places, whether you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or In His Shoes Facebook page, or even us personally. You'll find us here and there. Okay, that wraps it up. We're heading out right now. We've got a homeless feed over at Ascensia. A couple big shout-outs to my niece, Ani, celebrating her 4th anniversary. Yes, you remember her as the effervescent bubble. All the best to her. Many, many happy returns to her and Eric. And a big shout-out to Mariam, who will be starting her adventure, getting married next week out there in Armenia to Hovhannes. Wishing them all the best. God's blessings, and God's blessings to all of you. Thank you for joining us today. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of VPostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off power! On top limits.